Hi, everybody. This is Adriana Trigiani. I'm the host of You Are What You Read. I have the privilege of interviewing luminaries of our times about the books that shaped them from childhood until now. We get everybody from Sarah Jessica Parker to Kristen Hanna, Mitch Albom, Susie Essman, Craig Ferguson, Rainn Wilson, Amor Towles, you name it, they come, they share. New episodes of You Are What You Read drop every Tuesday on Apple, Spotify, or any major streaming platform wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Welcome to the family with
Kevin Pittman,
Alex Brant-Bernard Rasmussen,
co-host Catherine Brandt,
Andy Brant-Bernard,
Mike Bryant.
We got them all in studio, ladies and gentlemen, and we'll be right back, kick things off with the family.
You want to do a live or
we
recorded?
Can. Sure.
All you want right. to do a live?
Yeah, we're both back in here. Sure, we can do that.
Ladies and gentlemen, Michael Bryant, Bradshaw, and Bryant.
People are getting called all the time by adjusters who are trying to talk them into taking lower settlements or trying to get them to settle their case without fully evaluating it. And it makes sense to run it by an attorney who knows how to do this, does it all the time, and won't charge you to talk to you.
What a man. You didn't do what you always do.
What? Walzer.com.
There you go. Now you got it. Michael Bryant, Bradshaw and Bryant.
Dougie, what's new at my favorite Nissan stores?
Well, now that everybody's back from vacation, we can finally get to work.
Yeah, easy there, gunpowder.
Hey, at least you only took a week. J-Lo was gone darn near a whole month. Poor Dan Rush. Anyway, we got some great things happening at Coon Rapids Nissan and Walzer Nissan in Burnsville. Read this, and you can add that cool DJ voice if you want to.
It's 2020 closeout month at Burnsville and Coon Rapids Nissan. Giant discounts and 0% for 60 months on all remaining 2020s. You also get Walzer Care, a 10-year, 150,000-mile powertrain warranty for free.
Ah, music to my ears. I love the sound of a good DJ in the morning. But wait, there's more.
For the first time ever, you can get 0% for 60 months on the all-new 2021 Rogue. The 2021 Rogue is bigger, better, and faster than ever before. For more information on 0% interest on all these great vehicles, check out Coon Rapids Nissan and Walzer Nissan in Burnsville and tell them Tommy sent you.
I'll just cut out the last bit.
Hello, I'm Brad Huckle, president at North American Banking Company.
And I'm Mike Bilski, CEO at North American Banking Company.
As a community bank based right here in the Twin Cities, we believe in taking the time to get to know our customers and their businesses.
And part of that is hiring and cultivating a team of experienced lenders. When your business banks with us, you're not training in a new, inexperienced banker.
In fact, our bankers have worked with many of the same customers for years, earning their trust. We get to know you and your business, and you get to know and rely upon us.
When your business is looking to capitalize on an opportunity or solve a problem, we'll be here to help you.
Tom here. I know Brad and Mike, and I trust that with my banking, they've personally delivered on everything they've just said. So why not bank with my banker, North American Banking Company, a better banking experience, member FDIC, an equal housing lender. We are back, ladies and gentlemen, our very special guest, Linda Gordon, the book, The Second Coming of the KKK, the Ku Klux Klan of the 1920s in the American Political Tradition, a New York Times Book Review Editor's Choice Selection, as a matter of fact. It's available on Amazon and a lot of other places. Linda Gordon, how are you?
I'm pretty good.
I'm glad to hear that. So how did this whole project start, Linda, in the first place, for you, personally?
Well, for me, it's not a very interesting story. I was originally writing about the Ku Klux Klan in the context of a larger book. But then, because of what's been happening in our country recently and the rise of white nationalism, my agent and my editor said, well, why don't you just take that chapter and expand it into a book? So I worked like a devil to do that. And that's what happened.
So Linda, there's a perceivable rise in white nationalism in America?
Oh, today?
Yes.
Yes, of course. But, you know, you should know that I am not someone who's an expert on what's going on today. I'm an historian.
Right,
but,
exactly.
Obviously, anyone who would look at this book would see the connections. But I really don't. I have no expertise about today.
No, I understand. The second coming of the KKK, the Ku Klux Klan. What was it? Because the 1990s.
Hello.
Hello.
Missed you. What you were saying.
Oh, no problem. The Ku Klux Klan of the 1920s. Now, when you read history, you hear about how wonderful the Roaring Twenties were, and there was lots of money and lots of partying, and everything was wonderful. Why did the Ku Klux Klan make a resurgence, or the coming of the KKK?
Well, that is a very good question. Sounds like you know some history. I think the main thing that started this was the very, very large immigration into this country was going on starting in the 1880s up to 1920. Immigration that, for example, in terms of its proportion of the population was vastly, vastly bigger than anything we've seen recently. But this immigration had a feature that was very new to many Americans, and that is that most of the people that came were not white Protestants. They were Jews from Eastern Europe, Catholics from Italy and other Southern European places, Greek and Russian Orthodox. And this set off a reaction that was sometimes called nativist, although it's really a misnomer.
Right.
No white people in the U.S. are natives. But it was based on this idea that this country was supposed to be an exclusively white Protestant country, and that these people were coming in, and they were coming in to undermine it. And some of them came for that very purpose. The 1920s Ku Klux Klan was a master of conspiracy theories.
Sure.
And very, very frequently they used these conspiracies to... They were fear-mongers. They wanted to make people afraid that there were people coming in who were really not going to be loyal Americans.
Oh, so they wanted loyalty, immediate loyalty. Now,
sorry, you keep fading out. I'm not hearing your questions. I'm sorry.
Well, I'm good to go. So as far as this is concerned now, so all these other... I should tell you, by the way, my family got here in 1885, I believe it was. We are Roman Catholics from Western Europe, and I grew up very, very poor. Maybe that was because we were Catholic when we came to America in the late 1800s, but I've never understood what it was all based on. So they came to somebody else's country, took it over, and then decided that they were going to make the rules that you have to be just like me and look like me and act like me and believe what I believe, otherwise you don't belong here. Is that really what they thought?
Well, you know... Let me give you an example of the Ku Klux Klan's conspiracy theory about exactly what you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
They argued that the reason all these Catholics came to this country was not because they were poor, not because they were seeking a better life, but because the Pope had ordered them to come, and once they arrived, they were going to sort of go underground, like moles in an espionage story, and they were going to stay underground until they received orders for the coup that was going to turn this into the United States of Catholic America. Many of these conspiracy theories like that are, you know, when people hear things like this today, we think, how in the world could people have ever believed these things?
Mm-hmm.
But on the other hand, in the last few years, I've been seeing more and more evidence of people Bolivian conspiracy theories that
are
absurd.
Yes. Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. Well, matter of fact, that's what everybody does now. A lot of Hollywood, the politicians, and big tech, all they do is lie. And it's both parties, not just the Democrats or the Republicans. They all lie like mad. And they got these theories about this, that, and the other thing. They're still using these tactics today, don't you think, Linda?
Well, you know, I think there's a difference between lies and conspiracy theories. First of all, some conspiracies are true. There are conspiracies in the world.
Okay, sure.
But the difference between a lie and a conspiracy theory is that a conspiracy theory works by making itself impermeable to evidence. And the Klan says, and a lot of conspiracy theorists, when you try to confront them by saying, well, what's the evidence for what you're saying? they will say, well, of course there's no evidence because conspiracies are secret, and that's why you don't know the truth. And we see this over and over again about very many things, and it's conspiracy theories do a lot of work. They are very effective at revving up a kind of fear-mongering, which can then turn into anger and hostility. But I think, you know, what's really interesting in all of this kind of stuff is that you have people who are really afraid that there are people who are trying to undermine the country or undermine the basic values of the country. And the Klan did this, as many conspiracy theorists do, in the name of patriotism. Because the argument the Klan used against black people, against Jews, against Catholics, was that these people could never be patriotic Americans.
But they could. That was patriotism driving other people out. Instead of a free America, we'll decide who gets in and who doesn't. How is that a free America? I never understood their thinking.
Well, you know, first of all, the 1920s Klan was a very religious movement. It was a white evangelical movement.
Right.
And one of their favorite claims that they used over and over again in their cartoons was, if Jesus were alive today, he would be a Klansman. And the argument is that this country had a God-given mission to be a white Protestant country. And, of course, even forgetting the question of whether you think God gives orders like that, it was also not factual because this country had never been exclusively a white Protestant country.
Right, right.
But I think also what you get there, and I think you see it in a lot of these kind of movements, is they had a kind of a gut feeling of anxiety about diversity. They would argue that a country with diverse peoples of many different kinds can never be a stable and strong country. That a country has to be composed of a homogeneous population. Now, of course, you know, these people are not Nazis. They are not out to murder these people. But what they are out to do is to say that these groups should not be allowed in political office, that they conducted a lot of boycotts, trying to say that these people should also not be able to achieve economic success by running stores that, you know, ordinary Americans will pay into. So they're not deadly. I mean, this is a very important distinction because the first Klan, which arose right after the Civil War,
right,
was a terrorist organization. It committed something like 4,000 lynchings over a period. This Klan had figured out that they could actually get much further by electoral means. And by using propaganda to sell people on their ideas rather than violence. Now, they did do some violence, but it was marginal to what they were really trying to accomplish.
You know, Linda, it's so amazing as you're talking. I'm listening. I'm kind of placing those same ideals and ideas in 2021 in America. It's happening again.
Yep.
I mean, not through the Ku Klux Klan or whatever, but people believe anything they hear from certain people, which flat out lies, propaganda, all the rest of it. We all hear how horrible we all are. I don't understand, Linda, why we want to do things like that. Why you're horrible and I'm wonderful. I've never understood that.
Yeah, I don't either. There may be some psychologists who have that insight.
Right.
But I will say that, you know, a lot of people who might have started out seeming reasonable, thoughtful, cautious people can really be revved up into hysterical levels of anger. And unfortunately, I think this is something about human beings, that we are susceptible to that. I think that then a lot of us, and I'd like to think more and more, begin to understand that you have to be critical about things that you hear. That, you know, that not everything is true, as you're pointing out over and over again. And I actually believe that this is, you know, I shouldn't be talking about the present because I'm a historian, but I believe that schools could do a whole lot better at teaching what we would call sort of critical viewing, looking at advertisements, looking at political stuff, and you know, making people accustomed to the idea that you should not take these crazy ideas for granted.
No, I think it's a great idea. I think you're right on the money with that, Linda. I just, it's kind of sad. You know, I've read a lot of history. You know, you already made a very kind comment there, but I read a lot of history, and it just keeps recycling, Linda, whether it's in a different form, it's a different group of people doing it. We just keep repeating the same mistakes about every 50, 60 years, and I don't understand why we don't learn anything.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. And, you know, the 1920s Klan is called the Second Klan, even though it was really a continuation of the first. But historians actually say that there are four Klans. The third one was arose in opposition to the Civil Rights Movement, and particularly in opposition to desegregating the schools. But what you have there is an organization that I would call Klan-ish, but it took a different name. It was called the White Citizens Councils.
Right.
And then today, you do have a Ku Klux Klan, but the Ku Klux Klan today, this is the fourth Klan, is really just one small group among many, many, many of these white nationalist groups. So I think it's important in thinking about the Klan to not just think about now who is and who isn't an actual member, but to think about who has these kinds of ideas that I, for shorthand, call Klanish ideas.
Yeah, I understand it completely. And, you know, I mean the word Klan in a different way here, not the Ku Klux Klan, but clans of people, like a family clan kind of deal.
Yeah, right.
We are very clannish people anyway in America. We're very clannish. Maybe people around the world are clannish. And again, I'm just talking about, you know, the one word, not the whole KKK. But
Well, I think most people want to have small communities or families that they feel supported by and close to, and you know, no one can feel equally strongly about everyone, right?
Right.
We all have a limit to how many people we can love.
Why don't we not prejudge people? That would be a good place to start. Don't prejudge. And just because you don't agree with me, I don't hate you. And I got to believe we could all get along a lot better if we didn't have people making money off of hatred and anger. Because that, the money thing to me, Linda, is right there.
Well, it's so strong in the 1920s Klan.
Yep.
The 1920s Klan was a for-profit corporation.
Really?
And the reason it had at first its just explosive growth was because, and this was very interesting to me as an historian, I think this was the first social movement in history to hire a professional public relations firm to promote it.
Really?
And what that firm did was to establish what really amounts to a pyramid scheme. The way it works was that if I recruit you to the Klan, you have to pay a $10 initiation fee, plus dues, but the initiation fee alone, $10 in 1920 is worth well over $120 today.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I recruit you, but I get to keep 40% of that before the rest of it goes to the headquarters of the Klan. Then you could do the same thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
You can recruit people and keep 40%. But what happens in pyramid schemes is that eventually you run out of people to recruit. And this was one of the weaknesses of the Klan, and one of the reasons that caused its temporary decline. Also, as you can imagine, with that kind of money flowing around, we're talking millions of people, right, paying constantly. Well, its corruption was really over the top. And as leaders were using that money in corrupt ways, and the members started to get aware of that, and it, you know, it made them a little more cynical about the Klan. Although, in another sense, their view was that the profit motive is the best thing about America, and therefore, anybody who's using any means to make a profit is okay.
Yeah.
So they're kind of contradictory about that. They don't want corruption, but on the other hand, they think, of course, everybody strives to make as much profit as they possibly can.
Yeah, but running right over other people to get that done does not sit well with me. Why do you have to destroy people so you could make money? I've never understood that.
Well, same here. Same here. Obviously, it's, you know, there people have a right to try to earn some money, but there need to be some constraints and some ethics involved in this. But, you know, the other thing that's interesting about this Klan, just to mention one more important thing, you know, I said that the Klan was both very, very anti-Semitic and anti-Catholic. But one of the things that was interesting that happened in the 1930s is many, many of these Klans people went into American fascist groups. In the 1930s, we had over 100 small fascist groups. And when I say fascist, I mean these are groups that are openly admirers of Hitler and Mussolini. They make no bones about that. They speak of fascism as a really honorable system and that democracy can never work. But also, the point I wanted to make, too, about this is that one of the leaders of these groups that was very, very popular with the Klan was a guy called Father Coughlin. He was a Catholic priest, and he was a radio personality. I think of him as kind of the original shock jock. You know what I mean?
Yes, I do. Yeah.
And so here are these Klans people who in the 1920s were completely, very virulently anti-Catholic, and they discarded that and went along with Coughlin, who was organizing and a hero of many of these fascist groups. So I think that says something important, is that the same kind of intolerance in which you can change its targets so that a group that was a target in the 20s is no longer a target in the 30s. But the impulse is the same.
You know what I found, Linda, reading about Father Coughlin was a lot of self-hatred. He did not like himself very much, and I think that's kind of where he got the desire to go out and change everybody, because he didn't like himself, and therefore everybody had to change to make him better. So I was worried about people like that, emotionally and psychologically. These people are not thinking clearly.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think I've read things that make that argument.
Yep.
In a very complex way. I think it's quite interesting. I was actually just reading something for a seminar that I have to teach by James Baldwin, Black radical. And he has a passage that's really interesting in which he says that this hatred comes out of white people's self-hatred. In other words, you have to have self-esteem about yourself in order to be able to accept other people.
I think that's 100% true, Linda. I'm glad you brought that up and made that point, because I think that's right on the money. If you're hating yourself, you're going to hate everybody else even more.
Right.
Which is really stupid.
Exactly.
The book is called The Second Coming of the KKK, The Ku Klux Klan of the 1920s and the American Political Tradition. It's available at Amazon and everywhere else. It has already won a New York Times Book Review Editor's Choice selection. Linda Gordon, the author. Linda, thank you so much for your time today. Wonderful to talk to you.
And thank you for your interest.
Thank you.
Take care.
You too.
Stay safe.
We'll try to do that, Linda. Thank you. An interest. They're very, very. There are several interesting points there, I think. And also, talking to her and looking back at all the reading I've done over the years about that era and all that stuff, if you look back 100 years, we've learned nothing.
No.
I mean, seriously.
And we keep doing the same crap.
We do the same things over and over and over again. Every 50 years, because it was 60 years now, because of the late 60s. So it was about 55 years. The late 60s, everybody hated everybody else, and you hippie bastard, and oh, you straight-laced pain in the ass, and this. That was the big argument now. I do believe that James Baldwin is right, that anybody who hates somebody else based on their skin color hates themselves. And that's across all skin colors.
Well, that's why hate campaigns are so effective.
Yep.
Because everybody's got this little, I'm not really sure if I'm okay. I need a group to latch on to tell me I'm okay.
Yep.
And if I don't have that, who am I? So it's easy. I mean, it's just so easy to find fault and to spread hate. It's really, really easy.
It is really easy.
And that's why it's so effective. That's why political campaigns are the way they are.
We got to take a quick break here, but I mean, look, I'm not one to talk. I'm sitting between a lawyer and an African American. What the hell? How did I get in this position?
You must
I think it's voluntary.
It's Monday.
It's Monday. Right. Yeah. That's the answer. It's Monday. That's why you're here, ladies and gentlemen. I'm glad that she's putting the book out here because there are so many things going on today. We'll take a break and come back. I would like to discuss a couple of things that are going on right now with everybody at this table, and we'll be right back. Of course, you can call the the talking text line. What do we call it? The studio
talk
line.
Talking
text works. Line. Yeah, talking text line. What's that number, Andy?
561-228-4061.
There you go. We'll be right back with the family.
Did you have my pillow copy to read?
I do. You want me to open with that?
Yep.
I will get it done right now.
All right, everyone else's mics are going off.
Now, this, by the way, was written by Dawn, so it could be way off the mark. You know what I'm saying. As you know, my friend Mike Lindell has a passion to help everyone get the best sleep of your life. Well, he didn't stop by simply creating the best pillow. Now Mike has done it again by introducing his new My Slippers. Mike has taken over 2 years to develop. The My Slippers are designed to wear indoor and outdoor all day long. Made with MyPillow foam and impact gel to help prevent fatigue, and made with quality leather suede. For a limited time, Mike is offering 40% off his new My Slippers. The My Slippers are so comfortable, you'll want to get some for the whole family, which is what we did. Call 1-800-516-5146 or use promo code Tom, of course. 1-800-516-5146. Use promo code Tom or go to MyPillow.com. Click on the radio listener square and use promo code Tom. You'll also get deep discounts on all MyPillow products, including the Giza Dream bed sheets, the MyPillow mattress topper, and MyPillow towel sets. Call 1-800-516-5146. Use promo code Tom. Dan Chesky is here from Dan's Southside Marine to talk boats in February.
2021 is all about boat inventory or the lack thereof. Dan's has what you're looking for in the color and model you want. So get in and take advantage of the factory incentives and discounts February offers.
Why should our listeners shop for a fishing boat at Dan's Southside Marine?
We have the latest models on display, like the new Revolution. It features rotational seating from Premier Marine. And the new Alumacraft FSX crossover fishing ski. Both are getting tons of attention and grabbing sales from the competition.
Dan's Southside Marine is packed with pontoons from Avalon, Berkshire, and Premier. With all the rebates and incentives we mentioned at the top, get the family out this weekend and come see these amazing pontoons.
And be sure to ask about custom-rigged Alumacraft fishing boats this weekend at Dan's Southside Marine during our February open house.
Dan's Southside Marine, 6 blocks west of 35W on 98th Street in Bloomington. Shop online at dansouthsidemarine.com.
There are definitely things to avoid during a Minnesota winter, like licking a flagpole or waiting too long to replace that car battery. But number one on the list is taking a chance on your furnace. Hey, Tom here for Sabre Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning, reminding you that a furnace clean and tune will improve efficiency, reliability, and peace of mind. Or maybe it's time to take advantage of Sabre's rebates and upgrade to an energy-efficient Bryant system. Don't take chances on your comfort. Visit SabreHeating.com. Sabre and Bryant. Whatever it takes.
I believe in the kingdom come. Then all the colors will bleed into one.
We are back, ladies and gentlemen. Just a couple of things looking at the world the way it is. And thank you again to Linda for coming on the show.
Oh.
I was expecting that to go a whole lot worse.
Why? Thanks, Andy.
Well, because of the topic.
Yeah, the topic is a little scary.
Yeah.
Why is the topic scary?
Because just the fact that
people are just so politically charged today. I and a lot of people in the chat actually were expecting her to start saying, you know, like, oh, the Klan's back, everyone's going to kill all the black people. Because that's what people do on social media.
No, they do, yes. Mm-hmm.
You're so right. We expected they her do. To do that, but actually she didn't. So,
but she didn't because I happen to be very well read in the KKK, so I wasn't going to let her go down those roads anyway.
Me too, but I don't tell anyone about it.
Oh, jeez. So, Tom.
Yes. Matt Braun, yeah.
A listener.
A listener.
Says that K-O-W-Z?
Cows!
FM is out of Owatonna, not Winona.
Well, they said Winona.
You were wrong.
I can find out right. I can find out where a transmitter is right now.
We moved from the North Metro to the South Metro, and I can now pick up a radio station, K-O-W-Z, Cows.
Cows.
Out of, where is it out
of? I love it.
It's not Winona, it's somewhere else.
Technically, the transmitter is in Blooming Prairie, wherever the hell that is.
Oh, Blooming Prairie is not that far.
By New Prairie, the broadcast area is Owatonna, Waseca, Minneapolis, St. Paul.
So it is Minneapolis, but I couldn't get it anywhere
else. So you were wrong at last about something.
What a shock. I was wrong.
Thank God.
It's a 100,000-watt transmitter, so it's got a pretty big range. Yeah.
I love the fact, because they come on there and they go, you're listening to Cows. I love that.
The futures report on piglets is...
So it's out of where? It's out of Owatonna?
Yes!
Winona, Owatonna, what the hell's the difference? It's all some Hunyuk Swede deal.
Completely different.
Completely different.
Yes. We were watching Criminal Minds yesterday, because that's all Melissa watches. And
it's a good
they
show.
Had an episode in Winona.
Father. Really?
Yeah.
Are Winona?
Oh, yeah. Yep, Winona, Minnesota.
Maybe that's where I got it.
It's the second time they've ever been in Minnesota. The first was in St. Paul.
During lockdown, that was one of our escape hatches. We went to Winona and stayed in a hotel.
Tom still talks about it.
With a pool and a little splash pad and all that kind of stuff.
Sliding down the shark's mouth.
It's a very cute little town.
It is a great town. Anywhere near there.
It's a really nice town. It really is.
Yes.
A lot of nice little towns in Minnesota.
Oh, yeah, there are. You just have to go seek them out.
Yeah, well,
you're not going to just find them.
Any of those little river
river
towns, they're just so pretty. And they're old.
If you had to guess what rank Minnesota is in terms of area among the states, what would you guess? Because I feel like it's got to be pretty big.
It's got to be pretty big, yeah.
Got to be top 20, I would think.
Yeah?
It's a big state.
It's actually number 12.
Yeah, there you go. Number 12.
I know, I'm trying to think of
Texas number one.
Yeah.
Montana's got to be.
Oh, that's right.
California's
huge. Everyone always forgets about Alaska.
I do.
Because Alaska's gigantic.
California's gigantic.
You
Texas
could almost
gigantic.
Fit three Texases in Alaska.
Montana's
I feel like they need
huge.
To physically on maps for like drop big.
Yeah, when you look on a map, it's like Texas is the size of my hand and Alaska's the size
they just
of my
put it
pinky.
In this little box,
it's like,
so everyone's like, oh, it's small.
That's because of the curve of the globe.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, well, Alaska, Texas, California, then Montana, interesting.
Yeah, Montana's
big,
huge, yeah.
No doubt. By the way, on the way in, I got a message from Cher. She wants to talk to you about black people in America because she's an expert. Well, did you hear what she said?
No.
Oh, yeah. She's just the craziest person
she's
in the
insane.
World.
She's insane.
Who is this woman?
She
there?
Said if she were in Minneapolis,
oh.
she could have saved
oh,
George Floyd.
Wait, like the Cher? Like Cher? Cher?
Yeah, Cher.
Oh, I was thinking there was just some random Cher in
no,
the building.
No, this
know.
Is Cher. Cher.
Ah, that's
and she
Cher.
Said,
Cher
if
Johnson.
I was in Minneapolis, I could have saved George Floyd.
How?
Did she I say don't know.
Got she up and she could out. Turn back time.
Yeah, so she could have saved George Floyd. And then, of course, your buddy, Joe Biden, has to come out with, the death of George Floyd is much more important and much bigger than the assassination of MLK.
Wow. That
is he
well,
out of
in his presidency, in his presidency, it's true.
Yeah, my hand's up. I was like, what are you talking
he's
about?
He's like, I'm going to look into this.
That's because he can leverage this one. He can't
well,
do
that's,
much
he
about
can't
that
leverage
one.
MLK, that's true.
Well, I've seen so many people like, he's the Martin Luther King of our time.
Well, they're literally
Who?
Making him into a deity.
George Floyd.
George Floyd.
How is he the Martin
not,
Luther King of our time?
Not even close.
Because he was black.
Really? Yeah, that's...
So
that's basically
again,
it.
So
well, because
again,
of the martyrdom right. factor is there. It is.
Jesus, I just, but it's MLK. He's like my hero as a teenage boy.
And Martin Luther King like did stuff while he was, not that George Floyd didn't, but nobody knew about him until he died.
I don't think he did anything.
He pulled a gun on a pregnant woman. He did do that. Yeah. But yet, let's not compare MLK to George Floyd.
Yeah, like they're
not
completely
separate issues.
Yeah.
Why do people have to do that?
Well, it doesn't even make sense everything. As a comparison.
No,
it makes no sense whatsoever.
So,
yeah, George Floyd wasn't a civil rights leader.
No,
well, he's not
giving speeches at the White House. Yeah.
Maybe as far as like aware, like them bringing awareness to race issues, they're sort of comparable.
Yeah.
I'm
stretching.
It's like, yeah.
What he said was that it had a bigger worldwide impact than the actual assassination.
No, he went on from there, too.
Though. Well, I'm reading what he said.
Yeah, from where? From CNN?
I'm reading it from Forbes.
Same thing.
But he's talking about cell phones, and he's talking about the marching around the world. I mean,
I guess, yeah, if it's like one person kind of like galvanizing everybody and getting everybody out, I can see the comparison there. But yeah, it was like the way that we got there was definitely different.
MLK was...
I mean, the long-term effect of MLK was... Well, that's... when you look at it and you say, if MLK really had a true impact, would we have some of the problems we had today? And
killed very young.
Yeah, but there's a
gather your thoughts.
Yeah. It's a hard
gather your thoughts. That's nice.
The long-term effect is, I think, the bigger issue hopefully MLK has a bigger long-term effect.
I would hope
But that all being said, I think one of the questions today is what really long-term effect it had if we're still having the problems we're still having. And
do you think we ever...
Well, you're always going to have problems. Yeah, to have problems.
Yeah, I agree.
Don't ever see this whole thing resolving where everything's perfect.
It's like more people die every day than they did 100 years ago, but modern medicine is still a good thing.
Well, it's because we have more people, too. I mean,
have more people. If the population today was the population that it was 100 years ago, everything would be in smaller magnitude.
Oh,
it's just it works.
That's
true. Well, and like Charles Barkley said, right?
Both suck.
He's like, if politicians are the ones that are fueling most of this
crap.
It's true.
And
no
it's
question.
True. And if you have to be blind not to see it.
And it's both parties doing it, too.
Yes, because it works. Like I said, all of this works. Keep people fearful, keep people hungry, and you can control them 100%. Governments have known that since the dawn of government.
Yeah. I just don't understand how anyone ever thinks that everyone is going to just...
I know, it's just not
get
how
along,
it
and there's going to be no race issues
people
and no
find a reason.
Wage gaps, and there's like everything's just going to be copacetic,
if it's not class, it's religion. If it's not religion, it's nationality.
Exactly. Yeah,
it's
like
it's not nationality.
Tribalism.
And it's just like there's always going to be some methed out racist
<Or that>.
Idiot in a trailer park. Shouting,
watch your trailer park references.
I'm just saying, there will be. There's always one, and then there's always going to be I'm super highbrow and know everything,
exactly.
And I can pay my way into whatever. Like, those people will always exist.
They will.
And everyone in between. So
they're
like.
As long as you have power structures where some people are, in control of other people, you're always going to have corruption and all of this crap. And, until everybody's just completely equal and everybody's just as smart as anybody or just as dumb as
That's
everybody
not possible,
else.
Unfortunately.
And has the same exact amount of money and looks up, their looks aren't too good or too bad.
Right.
I mean, how are you going to do that?
Well, and there's just no way of, talking about anything that people feel passionately about, there's no way to ever get, like I was talking to my brother-in-law about the COVID vaccine this weekend. He thinks it's the greatest thing in the world and it's going to save everyone in the land. And you could not pay me to get one. And he was like saying all this data, and then I was saying data back to him, and everything's always so skewed.
This
is before.
Yeah.
This is before.
Different
that
walking.
Was the, you're jumping into my what I'm saying here. So we were talking about it, and then I was like, then he said something that actually made literally no sense. And then I just said, oh, that's great. And then I just walked away.
Okay, there you go.
Because I was just like, no matter what I say, I'm never going to change his thoughts and opinions because he's going to read his sources that he finds so reliable. And then I'm always going to read. Because data is great, but data can be skewed.
Yes. Big especially time. If you ignore numbers. Part of it.
If yeah, there are numbers and so it's involved, like, they're not accurate.
I love data because it feels, you know, like hard facts and numbers, but that's it can be true. Moved into. I mean, you can watch a documentary on Netflix about how salmon will kill you. Like, yeah, if you eat salmon, you will surely go into cardiac arrest because there were three studies done. And these people ate salmon and died at some point. Or, you know, it's just like, this just correlation is not causation.
You have to know a lot about medicine to understand what medical studies say.
Yeah. And you also have to see who's funding a study.
Exactly.
Funding is a huge problem.
Which they really like hiding that.
Yeah, you know, like for him, he's like looking at, like, oh, Pfizer says, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, they're making a product that they want you to get.
Well, yeah,
like,
exactly.
Of course,
but an independent study that they paid for said it.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And so it's like, it's great for him. I'm like, get it. Have everyone you know get it.
Get it three times.
Like, yeah.
Take one for me.
Go
take
on. Yeah. More for you.
Get one in each cheek. Yeah. Fine.
Yeah, do I'm it. Not going to prevent anyone from getting it. I'm just not going to get it.
It's a personal opinion. But it's just like the same with everything. No matter what I said to him and no matter what he said to me, we weren't going to change each other's mind.
No.
And he's the type, he brought it up and he was kind of like poking the bear kind of. He's like, oh, my arm's not sore anymore. And I was like, why would your arm be sore? And he's like, I got my first vaccine.
I was like, your ass to be sore when I kick it in.
I said, I was like, congratulations.
Oh, that's a little much.
Yeah. Okay, well, how about this? In the immortal words of the mayor and Blazing Saddles. We'll take the blacks and the Jews, but we don't want the Iberians.
Where are we going with this?
What the hell is an Iberian?
I don't even know.
It's Portuguese.
Oh, okay.
Most people don't have any idea what the Iberian
people are. Oh, that's right.
That's why it's such a good joke, because nobody knows the hell you're talking about.
Okay. He's forgetting that.
Your mom and I might move to Portugal someday.
Oh, my God. You guys might move everywhere.
We'd like to take a trip there
one time. We are going to go to Portugal, yeah. Should I mention your name?
We're building a house.
We'll mention Mike's name when we're there.
Yeah, I'll do you good.
I know. that'll lock you in across the board.
You know, I know someone who has five generations back ancestors here.
So, do you know him?
I have a question for everybody at the table here, because are we ever going to get anywhere when Major League Baseball pulls the All-Star game out of Georgia because of a voting thing, but they'll do business with the Chinese who have slaves?
Yeah, isn't that interesting?
I just don't.
How do you get there?
It's also ridiculous.
It's all power and profit. That's all it is.
Power and profit.
And to try
that's
to look a certain way. And
baseball. Don't mess with baseball.
To appease your social media followers, everything
but
is.
But I don't think, was anybody really asking them to move the All-Star game?
Like,
I didn't even know the All-Star game was in it.
Yeah.
I didn't either.
Until their boycott. There was a big boycott.
Got to mention one thing before we move on from that story. They're going to move the All-Star game out of Georgia, but the commissioner of baseball belongs to Augusta. So I could play golf there. That'll be fine. But you just can't have the All-Star. It's so funny.
How does Major League Baseball, how were they involved in the decision-making process for voting?
They were not involved.
Okay. So how are they held accountable for what the state of Georgia does?
They're not. There was no reason for them to move this game other than grandstanding.
Advertising campaign is all it is.
Yeah, because if they have the All-Star game there, they're bringing people to Georgia and they're supporting Georgia.
Yeah, and I'm sure if you dig deep enough, the commissioner of baseball probably has political connections to people Georgia that wants to move stuff. And I think that because right now Georgia, especially Atlanta, is like a literal war zone.
It is.
And
so
I think it's more so maybe they wanted to move out of there because it's not a safe place to be. Like every weekend there's shootings
out in the streets. Like Chicago and downtown Minneapolis.
Like if you scroll through Instagram on a Saturday, it's like another shootout at a Georgia club, another shootout at a bar.
Right.
People like just in the streets shooting all the time. So it's
I don't know why we have to be doing
this.
It's
not good.
As an attorney, what do you think?
About
shooting is illegal. Don't do it.
I mean, states have the rights to make their own rules concerning voting. That's pretty clear.
Right.
And anybody who's picking and choosing states on what they do, I think, has an issue. And so Georgia has a right to do what they do. I don't know why they did it when they did. I don't agree with some of the things they did, but they have a right as a state to do what they want. What,
I don't know a lot about it. Just they want you to show ID to vote. That's, well, that's the, all I know about
it's a lot. The bill's a lot more expensive than that. And that's,
well, every bill is 90% pork is the thing. Well, they can't, that just, is they can't true. Just pass a bill with one issue. They have to stuff it.
Yeah, if
I don't
they
know
could
why.
Just stop doing that.
That would be really nice.
Wouldn't that be something?
But I don't think anybody's concerned about the pork or what else is involved in the bill.
I think they should be, though.
Well, but the issue with it is just all the voting rules that they've added.
I thought there was only one. It was just ID.
No.
What else is
more
what
than
else
just
is
voter
I think they're going to only allow you to vote a day before and election day. Right?
But not after.
Well, there's time period issues. There's issues about giving water out.
Yeah,
the,
so you can't give, like, snacks and stuff.
You can't
but
give
that's
water
everywhere.
People in rolls. Well,
that's everywhere.
And that's because they might have a 50 next to that little bottle of water.
Yeah, that could be seen as bribery.
If it's more than a dollar, I know almost all states, if the thing costs more than a dollar, you can't give it out in a voting.
Because people could be like, oh, here's a nice $80 steak, by the way.
And when's the last time you bought a bottle of water for less than a dollar?
I still go back to the idea if you're going to pay somebody to go vote, unless you're walking in with them. I don't know that you're ever going to know how they vote. And about half
that's
the people
true.
You pay would probably go in and vote against you when they walk
out. I would just to be a
dink.
I
think the whole idea of paying people is like, I don't know that it works.
Yeah. And especially with the social media age, like that, I feel like that would be exposed in about 5 minutes.
Yeah, really.
Because you ask the wrong person to vote a certain way, they're going to take offense to that and blast everybody.
Yeah. I just wish everybody would settle down and just let it. They're going to create a massive amount of violence if they keep doing it.
They already have.
It's going to get much worse. Much worse if they don't stop this hatred toward everybody. Mm-hmm. And it ain't, you know, it doesn't get any better when you got Donald Trump and Barack Obama agreeing on something. Now I know the world's totally
what do they agree on?
That America's got their head up their ass. No, they have it for different reasons.
Oh.
I really wish Obama hadn't mentioned Jim Crow. That would have been really nice.
Well, of course, that's
the narrative about Georgia.
Was that
about Georgia?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's the comparison.
But it's not even close to Jim Crow, Mike.
Well, but the question is whether or not you're keeping people from voting. I mean, personally, I believe everybody who has a right should vote.
I couldn't agree more.
They're going to vote as they do.
But once.
And they're going to vote this time one way, and they're going to, 4 years later, vote a different way. And so
that's
the whole
the issue,
idea of
though.
Getting... Yeah, well, yeah
it's voting more than once is the issue.
Well, but I don't think there's any proof in Georgia that there was people who voted multiple
times. Was there an
election? Well,
then I guarantee you people voted more than once.
Then none of nothing here is going to stop someone who's going
to show ID.
If you have to show ID, that would help.
You know, Major League Baseball to pick up your tickets, you got to show them your ID to pick up your tickets. So why is that okay?
Mm. Well, by definition, less people are going to vote. That had a right to vote.
I don't think that's true.
Absolutely.
You could extend that argument to infinity, though.
I mean, if they can't make any money doing it.
Is there anybody out there, can you find somebody out there who doesn't vote because of voter ID? Because if there was voter ID, I would vote, but I don't vote because I'm concerned about voter ID. Is there such a person out there? And if such a person doesn't exist, then by definition, that change is going to mean less people vote.
There are certain cultures in America that will not provide ID for anything.
That's
they
a different.
Just won't
that's a,
do it.
A different. And then, if they have a right to vote, you're telling that culture they can't vote.
Yeah, unless you show ID. Sorry, it's too easy to
if
vote
you're
more
okay
than
with,
once.
If you're okay with, see, personally, I believe everybody should vote.
I do too.
Whoever
but they
are,
don't.
Whatever.
But then follow the
right
rule.
They don't anyway.
I agree, but none of these changes are going to lead to people more people voting. I unless you can point to one of those that does.
Well, okay. How do we solve the problem of all of this perceived, whether it's true, whether it's not, voter fraud, election meddling, all of these things that everybody's complaining about? What is a better way of proving that one person, one vote than voter ID?
I got to tell
you. Come up with a better system. I'm
signatures?
Sure
can they have a
like
signature
our,
on
I like
file?
Our system.
Can
I
they
think
have a signature on file and match the signature?
I think our system works. I think people voting in Minnesota works. I think the number of people who actually there's any voter fraud is very small.
But once again, one fraudulent vote is one fraudulent vote. If it's one person that can't vote, then
if I mean, what election's been impacted by one
I
vote?
I don't know.
I mean, there really hasn't been many elections.
It depends on who you ask.
By one vote? No, I don't think there has been.
Just not by one vote, yeah. But I mean, there's a lot of historical evidence of a lot of voter fraud in Kennedy's, definitely, positively.
West Virginia and Chicago, there's both issues there.
Yes.
Okay, yep. There's been issues there.
New York, for sure.
One of the interesting things is when you've looked at real attempts at trying to change voting, the number of people who vote, or how you do it, is it's been done bipartisan. You've had people that are leaders in both sides that have gotten together that have worked on those things.
Works for me.
Really?
Shocking. I mean, when you
I did not know that could
you
exist.
You looked at changes after Watergate, that was bipartisan. Huh. When you looked at changes after the Teapot Dome scandal, that was bipartisan. I mean, there's been a couple times in history where we've worried about what's happened, and it's been a group getting together deciding to do it. Mm-hmm. That's really not what happened in Georgia. Okay, that wasn't bipartisan, but I think states have a right to make the rules they do. But I believe that with all the states, all 50 of them have a right to do that the way they do.
Right.
That. So I don't have a problem in the sense of the theory. I just didn't like what they did and the parts to it. But I don't live in Georgia, so we'll live with what Georgia does.
My belief that Atlanta is pretty much run by Black people, right?
Well, but
they have the majority of the political seats
in
Atlanta. For
historically,
sure.
If you looked over the last couple of years, Republicans have been winning a lot in Georgia. So
really?
It must be outside of Atlanta, where almost everybody lives. It's been a red state. I didn't think we were going to win it presidentially, as far as Democrats go, this past election. And looking at it. What I believe happened in Georgia is that Stacey Abrams got upset because of what happened to her in governor. She thinks she got robbed as far as the voters go because she thinks voters were intimidated. That's what she believes.
So in other words, they cheated.
But what she did, well, she did.
Intimidating voters is cheating.
Sure. But what she did, she didn't change the rules. She went out and got people to sign up. She got people to register and she got people to vote. And then that wasn't liked. So other attempts have been made to stop her again. And I'm pretty impressed with her. So I think she'll come back and do it again. But we'll see what happens.
Is she the one that's been calling herself the mayor for all these years?
No, not the mayor. She ran for governor.
She ran for governor.
She's been calling herself the governor.
Yes.
Well, she believes that voter intimidation is what cost her the election. But that's what led to her registering people. She didn't change the law. She just went and got people registered and got people to vote, and that was the impact. And now they've responded with a different attempt to stop her again, and we'll see what happens.
We got to take a break. We'll be right back, though, with hour two with these Hun Yucks.